I'm Stephen Hundley, and this is the award-winning podcast, Leading Improvements in Higher Education, a service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. This episode focuses on the intersection of work in student affairs and that of assessment and accreditation. Our guests are Sarah Gordon, Bill Heinrich, and Pam Sheffman. Sarah is Associate Professor and Interim Dean for Research and Graduate Studies at Arkansas Tech University. Bill is Director of Mindset at Simplicity, an educational technology firm. And Pam is Executive Director of Planning and Assessment at the University of Houston, Clear Lake. I know you will enjoy learning about the evolving roles and relationships between student affairs, assessment, and accreditation on this episode of Leading Improvements in Higher Education. I'm very delighted for today's episode because we have colleagues who are going to be helping us talk about the intersection of accreditation and student affairs, the important work each of these areas can contribute to our mutual understanding of the other. We have Sarah, Bill, and Pam with us today. Sarah, Bill, Pam, welcome to the program.
Hello. Good to be here. Thanks.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
Wonderful. I'm glad you're all with us as well. And we always begin each podcast episode by asking guests to share a little bit about their background. So we'd like to ask each of you to do so right now by telling us a little bit about yourself, including your career trajectory and what you do in your current role. We'll start with Sarah, continue to Pam, and conclude with Bill. Sarah.
Yes, thanks for having us. And my name is Sarah Gordon. I am first and foremost a wife and mom, a wife to a housing professional and a mom to a little 8-year-old. As far as my career trajectory goes, I did not follow a traditional student affairs path. My undergraduate and master's degrees were both in human development and family science. I worked in a part of our housing operation on the campus that I was at an undergraduate in their family resource center. So that was my first connection into student affairs and housing. Then I was a residence director through my master's program. And I did my PhD in research, evaluation, measurement, and statistics after asking a lot of questions and seeing the importance of the research methods and program evaluation skill set in my work as a higher education professional. I have been, in addition to a housing professional, I have also been a university-wide director of assessment. I've been a tenure-track faculty member on 2 campuses. I'm now a tenured associate professor and interim dean of research and graduate studies here at Arkansas Tech.
Sarah, thank you for that introduction. And now we continue to Pam.
Hi, I'm excited to be here. Very different path than Sarah. I'm a first generation college graduate. Did do a traditional student affairs background in terms of the housing. I've done student activities, student leadership. I ran student unions, Greek life, kind of all of those pieces of campus life, but on a non-traditional academic path. I started out with computer science as my background and then switched to psychology and have actually an MBA, which most people don't go into higher ed with an MBA. And then eventually found my way to my doctorate program after going through a couple of different realms, including working in academic affairs and the academic advising side and working in a curriculum office. And while I was in my doctoral program, I was able to do some research around student affairs assessment. And so, you know, that means I'm dating myself a little bit because that was, you know, when student affairs assessment was just starting and was able to use some of my research to create an inaugural student affairs assessment position at my institution. So that's kind of how I got into the student affairs assessment piece in terms of how that related to where I am today because right now I work in institutional effectiveness role through assessment and planning, and am, you know, directly reporting through a provost office. So exciting different roles. I've been at R1 private institutions, 4-year public land institutions, as well as community college. And today I would say out of all the places I've been, I kind of have the best seat on our campus because I get to touch everything from our facilities management to what's happening in our classrooms to what's happening across our campus life. So it's been a really awesome trajectory in terms of the roles and opportunities I've had.
Pam, thank you for sharing your background. And now we conclude our introductions with Bill.
Hello, everyone. Bill Heinrich. I use he and him pronouns. My background, went to university at Northern Illinois, studied psychology. I ended up, in a student affairs master's degree program at Michigan State and worked in housing and residential education. Really enjoyed that. Got a position at University of California, Santa Cruz. There's a little stopover where I was experimenting with outdoor education and guiding and trip leading. What kept me going, though, was the idea of the education part more than the outdoor. So stayed in housing, had a lot of questions, not unlike my colleagues here. And I went back to Michigan State after 7 years and studied in the higher education program for a doctoral degree where I focused on assessment and experiential education. That got me into roles where I was supporting competency-based education, high impact practices, experiential learning, and experiential education broadly. And into some on-campus consulting roles in a provost office at Michigan State in a full-time role. That was a really pivotal role where, because in part of my portfolio was I helped Michigan State develop their co-curricular record, which was from scratch, a pretty big project where a lot of collaboration was involved. That led me to the private sector where I now work for an ed tech firm called Simplicity. And I serve as a subject matter expert, and I support many campuses as they design and deploy comprehensive learner records, various experiential education activities. And as a result of that, I'm starting a new research project on how offices of experiential education form and become sustainable. Thanks. It's good to be here.
Bill, thank you. Each of you are well-equipped to provide perspectives on the theme of our episode. And in fact, we're going to be spending our time today talking about the role of student affairs in assessment and accreditation work. I'd like to ask, how did the three of you come together to dialogue about this topic? I'd like you to tell us more about some of your initial work. And some of that initial work includes an article you co-wrote in 2018 in the Journal of Student Affairs Inquiry. The article's title was The Role of Student Affairs in Regional Accreditation, Why and How to Be. So for this one, we're going to kick it off with Pam and then ask Bill and Sarah to round out very briefly some additional thoughts. Pam.
Great. I will say about 10 years ago at a NASPA conference, Bill and I were both doctoral students, and we went to the doctoral student conference piece, and we're just having conversations really around assessment because it's kind of where we were and the emerging trends and where folks were going. And over time, Bill and I would see each other at every other NASPA conference we would attend. And we would always have really engaging conversations around measuring the impact of student affairs. And as I started moving towards the accreditation roles and institutional effectiveness, we started talking more and more about how that is an important topic for student affairs professional, because in that inaugural role that I created for myself, I was actually given the opportunity to be a content creator for accreditation, which when I talked to other colleagues, when I would go to conference and stuff, they were like, wow, how did you get at the table? How did somebody invite you to start thinking about student affairs role in accreditation and what you do and how you're responding as an institution to those things? So that was kind of what spurred the where we are in terms of that article and where it came from, because we really wanted to know. I was sitting at the table because there were specific standards. So I'm in the Southern Association for colleges accreditation. And that piece of the work that I do for SAC-COC, there's specifically highlighted pieces that say, you know, the work of student affairs and student services and the support for the institution. And so that's why I got at the table, but other folks really weren't at the table. They were more of an afterthought of, oh, the accreditors are now coming to campus. Now you need to tell them what we wrote and how that is what you're doing. So I think that that was, for me, the pivotal piece. I really have some, you know, holes in my memory in terms of the other pieces since then. I think that maybe Bill or Sarah have some really good foundational pieces to where the article kind of came from. So I'll maybe pass it to Bill, because I think that was more the like thoughts behind writing an article. But I think the content, Bill has a little bit better handle on where we started with writing the outline and those things.
Pam, thank you for sharing that initial introduction around the how the three of you have come together to work on this topic and in this theme. And you mentioned in your answer, NASPA. Of course, that's one of the leading student affairs professional associations. I invite listeners to learn more about NASPA at their website, naspa.org. So Bill, continue with where Sarah left off and pick up the baton of how you all work together on this theme and this topic.
Yeah, Pam, thanks for covering and reminding me about where we met back in Florida in 2013. Fast forward to, like I said, I was helping Michigan State build out this co-curricular record, which is now known as the Spartan Experience Record. And when we wrote that article, I was deep in this project of considering learning outcomes data from across all sorts of educator providers at Michigan State's campus. So not only were learning outcomes being delivered at the, you know, in the classrooms and courses and field work, but they were being delivered in housing and res ed and in student leadership programs and in all sorts of clubs and orgs and activities potentially. But we didn't know. We didn't have that data. At the same time, there was a student success initiative on campus, and it's still going, where we were looking for ways to understand our students in new ways and in different ways to be more equitable and create better access for marginalized students. So building out the co-curricular record as we understood it meant creating a new source of data for those student success efforts. You know, Pam and I had kept up conversations. There was some online chatter through SAAL, Student Affairs Assessment List, where I think we came to the idea to write the paper. But what I wanted to convey is that there's a lot of really interesting data if we can access it. So I'll just say, when we built that record out, we were able to, we talked to the vice president's office in student affairs, but also to institutional research to see how they would consume that data. And accreditation was one of the likely outcomes when it comes to learning outcomes. Michigan State is in Higher Learning Commission and still is, I believe. And so, you know, that's a big part of the standard set, the accreditation standard set in that group. Those were some of the things I was thinking about with the article in the background.
Sarah, before we go to our next question, any additional thoughts from you?
Yes, I will add, Bill and Pam have met in real life, but not me. I haven't met anyone else. And when we wrote that article in 2018, we wrote that with another colleague, Dr. Catherine Gage. And so we did this completely via our internet friendship. and I highlight that only to say, you know, that was pre-pandemic. So that was before like Zoom and all of that was a really big deal. But we did. We connected through a listserv, like Bill mentioned, through the SAL. They created a Google Doc where people could just share like what their interests were. And we all had the same interests. So we connected and we've never stopped. We have related but very different experiences and roles on our campuses and in higher education. And that has even continued to evolve since we first came together as a group in 2018. But we recognized very quickly that we had a very unique and holistic perspective on assessment and the accreditation process and where student affairs fits into all of that. So it has been a very good collaboration.
Sarah, thank you. And in fact, Sarah, you are a return guest to this podcast, Leading Improvements in Higher Education. And since you and Bill both mentioned SAL, the Student Affairs Assessment Leaders Group, I invite listeners to consult Season 1, Episode 12, where Sarah and other principals from SAL shared information about that resource. Well, we've been acknowledging some of this in the answer to the previous question, so I'd like to turn our attention to why is the topic of student affairs and accreditation important? In your experiences and research, where and how does the work of student affairs get reflected in accreditation standards? And where are opportunities for improvements? We'll start this with Bill, continue to Sarah, and conclude with Pam. Bill.
Sure. So where does student affairs show up? That was a question we were asking in our paper. And real broadly, student affairs in name or in function shows up in lots of accreditation standards around student success, around reporting, around assessment of learning outcomes. There's a bunch of different accreditors, as we know, and they organize those opportunities and those expectations in different ways. But yeah, we were able to find them in a fairly straightforward way. We found labels, student affairs, student success, student services. Those were some of our keyword searches, as I recall. You can read more about that in the paper. So just fast forward to now and a little bit of preview of what we're seeing is we're seeing some of the term, student affairs and student services. We're not seeing that as much. We're seeing less of that. And so that prompted some deeper investigation, which we'll get into in a little bit.
Bill, thank you. And Sarah, your thoughts?
Yes, we definitely realized in our initial discussions back in 2017 when we first started talking about this together, we knew from the work that we were doing that student affairs as a division does a significant amount of work that contributes to student success on college campuses. And we also know that student success is a major outcome that accreditors want to know about. And so we wanted to create an article at that time that first and foremost helped inform student affairs professionals about the accreditation process, because at that time there were some of us who were involved in it, but others that were not. And so we wanted to just kind of lay it out there and give a little bit of an introduction to what that process is, why it exists, how it works, and where student affairs fits into that. And then also to make the case for a more holistic approach to accreditation arguments, ensuring that student affairs professionals had a seat at the table because they were most certainly helping do that work.
Sarah, thank you. And finally, to Pam.
And I would just loop back to how I had a seat at the accreditation table as a student affairs professional, which was so unique. And I think that was one of the reasons that the topic for the paper that we had, as well as recognizing the importance of student affairs within the accreditation realm, needed to be highlighted. And really having that seat at the table was one of the outcomes of our articles, but also in understanding that that's one of the opportunities for improvements. When we talk about where are all the constituents across our campus engaged in the work of improving students' outcomes on our campus, that student affairs is an equal partner at all of that. And so I think that's why the topic is important, but also the work that we did in terms of where it's reflected in the standards. And as Bill mentioned, the words actually do matter how we frame student affairs and the works of student affairs within accreditation. So finding those words and figuring what they are, where they were back in 2017-18 when we wrote that article, to where they are now, I think is also important to highlight.
Words matter, and an attention to student success and the outcomes of learning and the holistic way all of us can play a role in doing so. We, of course, have been acknowledging your earlier research related to student affairs and its relationship to assessment and accreditation, and in particular, the 2018 article in the Journal of Student Affairs Inquiry. And of course, we'll provide a link to that article in the show notes of this episode. So why does this work need an update? What is happening in the profession of student affairs, in accreditation, and throughout higher education more generally that compelled you to revisit this topic at this moment in time? For these questions, we'll start with Sarah, continue to Pam, and conclude with Bill. Sarah.
Yes, this year, earlier this year, we started having some discussions about future directions for our research team and really revisiting that 2018 article because we were reflecting a lot about what has changed. Kind of to Pam's earlier point about that words matter and doing the searches in that first article to find out what was showing up and how student affairs showed up in the accreditation standards. Like one of the words that was very common at that time was co-curricular, and that's not one that we use a whole lot anymore. So we knew that there were certainly changes, but also the student success movement has changed. The accreditation standards have changed. Some of student affairs work on campus has changed. A lot has happened in those 5 years. And also in that time, every single one of the accrediting bodies except one has updated their standards at least once. We also don't have regional accreditors anymore. Now schools can opt into whichever accrediting body they wish to be a part of. And the expectations of universities and education in general have been discussed and debated in the political realm quite a bit since then as well. So we just thought it was a good time to look back and see, you know, we were first making that argument for we should have a seat at the table. What's happened since then?
Sarah, thank you. You're describing some of the reasons why this work needs to be revisited. Let's continue the conversation with Pam.
And I would say in the trajectory of my career, as I now have shifted solely from student affairs to this more institutional lens and probably more connected to accreditation, broadly speaking, and attending more of the, we call them annual meetings and not conferences in the accreditation realm, meeting more with other folks across with our areas and the folks that are doing accreditation work. Everybody is updating their standards on a regular cycle, just like we in student affairs or in anywhere else. We're always trying to ensure that we're relevant to our students and getting what the students came to our institutions for, ensuring that that's happening. So, you know, as they're doing that same relevancy, I thought, you know, it's important that we do look at it because, again, every standard has changed since our original article. And the other, you know, bad word that starts with A is accountability. And so accreditation, accountability are this like intrinsically tied piece, and just knowing that institutions use that as their stronghold and accountability. How do we see changes towards the student affairs centric pieces that we saw before? And how does it look and feel now? I think is important for folks to be able to ground themselves in how they hold themselves accountable, but also this continuous improvement and ensuring that we're relevant here in higher education.
Pam, thank you. And finally, Bill, your thoughts.
Well, I'll just add sort of a real brushstroke of a historical perspective in that it appears what we're seeing now is a set of accreditation shifts as we documented in most recently. But you can think about accreditors, you know, they've changed over the years. They followed higher ed movements and initiatives. They've added assessment, then they added learning outcomes. They've reflected student success needs. And I think some of the changes we're seeing are logical outgrowths of this kind of assessment for improvement mindset. And as eventually, when you have enough data and, you know, you still want to move the needle, what you realize is you have to start uncoupling from previous practices. They're not that they're bad, but they can be made more effective. And I kind of wonder if moving away from the language of student affairs or the language of student services helps uncouple from, helps the campus uncouple from traditional ways of knowing and ways of acting in order to deliver different kinds of outcomes. So I think we're seeing the start of that, and that's part of why we're updating the work now.
Bill, thank you. So let me continue with our thinking here and in your review of the current status of student affairs work. And we acknowledge that even that language might be undergoing revision. In your review of the current status of this work and its relationship to assessment and accreditation, what did you find? What are some, say, enduring themes and what were some surprises or promising directions? We'll start with Pam, continue to Bill, and conclude with Sarah. Pam.
Well, I feel like you gave me the sweet question in terms of what we were working on, because it's really, this is critical to the work and what we've been writing about. And we have an upcoming article that will be released in March, that what the biggest finding that we had is how student affairs is no longer separated in the standards. Some of our work, when we just revisited identical standard to standard comparison, the change is that the language of student affairs or student services is now just incorporated throughout more of the standards than in just this one or two standards that are the quote unquote student affairs standards, right? They're now more broadly throughout. And the language is now aligning more towards the outcomes of student affairs and not just looking at what types and services do you have and are they appropriate for your mission and your student population. It is more about what student affairs is doing and less about, are you providing enough places for students to feel like they're connected through student affairs? So it's less about certain services or activities and more focused on outcomes for students, right? So moving away from this traditional lens that student services has its one singular place on campus to that student affairs and the work of student affairs and the outcomes of student success kind of is everyone's job on campus. So that's one of the more interesting pieces. And I think one of the quotes we have is that it's no longer where standards say, do A. It's now make sure that you get to student affairs success through student success. It doesn't say you have to do a prescriptive piece. So I think that that's one of the big jewels that we found. And your question is really intriguing to me in terms of enduring themes and maybe surprises or promising directions. And I think that the enduring theme is that student affairs professionals know that we're not in one place on campus. We are kind of embedded throughout all of anywhere a student is. And so I think that that as a student affairs enduring theme is that we're not just in one place, right? That we are providing what I would call critical skills, not soft skills, to students everywhere they are. And so that I think is an enduring theme that's like student affairs bread and butter, but also how it's now tied in through and woven throughout accreditation, which kind of one of the surprising things is that there's more, not just a nod to student affairs, but this movement towards the whole educational experience. So I think that that is probably a promising direction and a surprise, maybe in the same time.
Pam, thank you. You're describing the holistic nature of this work that needs to be integrated with a focus on outcomes. So Bill, let's continue to you.
Yeah, I mean, Pam covered a lot, so I don't want to repeat too much. I would say that where we saw changes in the language of the language really focuses on outcomes language and delivery. So the standards, instead of reading, for example, or just really basically, instead of reading, you know, do this kind of service or provide this sort of access, it just says, it doesn't even say what to provide. It just says, set your goal and deliver on it. And, you know, set a threshold for success and deliver it. It's really quite striking how different it feels when you read those standards through this lens of, you know, who's supposed to do this or how are we supposed to get this done? It just doesn't specify in certain cases. And we thought that was really compelling and worth discussion. So we dove in, and I'll let Sarah continue with that.
Sarah, round us out with your thoughts on these important questions.
Yeah, I would say, to kind of sum that up, the change that we saw the most often when we looked at these standards again was really a clear focus on student success. And a lot of times that has to do with graduation outcomes or outcomes that lead to graduation, but not always. And that was really the focus, student success, not emphasizing services and programs anymore. So like Pam mentioned, much less prescriptive about how something is achieved and much more focused on that it is achieved. The accreditation standards really seem to embrace now that institutions as a whole, not individual divisions or silos, but just the university as a whole must ensure that processes and programs are in place that lead to student achievement.
Sarah, thank you. Obviously, the three of you and other colleagues have been working on these themes and these topics, of course, those being the intersection of the student affairs portfolio with that of assessment and accreditation. So you've been working on this for the past several years. I'd like to talk about how your research informs professional practice. In other words, what are some implications and opportunities for student affairs leaders and professionals, for accreditors, for assessment professionals, really, indeed, for all of us in higher education? We'll start with this set of questions, first with Bill, continue to Sarah, and conclude with Pam. Bill.
Well, I appreciate this question. I've been out of student affairs from a direct practice for some number of years, for over 10 years. So it's been a while since I've been directly involved, although I'm still involved in adjacent ways. And so what I'm noticing is, when campuses really take this kind of challenge up, they really start to rearrange things. So we're starting to see implications for, major units and organizations on campus. We're starting to see examples where, we'll see mergers and sort of work getting dovetailed between different kinds of units that we really haven't seen that before. Student success, I think, as a movement is a good example of this, where we start to see the uncoupling of responsibility from old ways and sort of recoupling to new ways in order to get these results. I think that's the closest analog I can imagine right now. I think we're going to start seeing in terms of practice, the way we keep track of data, the way we label our student outcomes. And with my hope is that relabeling allows us to sort of reinform ourselves about how things happen, about how success is actually achieved. So, we're moving past whatever habits and patterns we were in previously in order to, deliver on the promise of student success and access for more and more kinds of students.
Bill, thank you. Let's continue to Sarah.
I think to Bill's point about the rearranging, or even maybe the other dreaded R word, restructuring that happens on college campuses and is happening for a variety of reasons, not just assessment and accreditation, but we are seeing the landscape change a little bit. And, even to what is included under the Division of Student Affairs. I know, for example, at my institution, we have done some restructuring starting in 2020, and enrollment management is now under Student Affairs here. And that is not unheard of for that shift to happen. So I think that's one piece of this, is just that the inclusion of Student Affairs in the work of campuses is very important. And therefore, the inclusion of student affairs in assessment and accreditation work is very important. And as we move and shift toward this more holistic approach of institutions being called to demonstrate how they are working toward student success, it means that we have to not be as siloed. It means we have to really focus on making data-driven decisions about what we're offering and why, and what we're not offering and why. And it, as always, another underline to why we have to be nimble as higher education professionals and student affairs professionals, and really focus on outcomes and what's best for our students.
Sarah, thank you. We'll conclude our conversation concerning the implications of research with Pam.
And I would say my biggest thought around implication opportunities for all the professionals is that, I think Bill was the one who brought up that this is kind of breaking down some of the barriers across campus, where it's not just inside the classroom and outside the classroom, but really institutionally, what are we doing? And so I think that that is informing kind of this conversation around this restructure and maybe refocus of our campuses towards student success as the outcome and kind of everyone's role. But I feel historically student affairs was in their place and the academic affairs was in their place. And then the accreditation professionals on our campus kind of felt like they were also in their place. And so how do we use this as an opportunity to change our practice that we work together as an institution for student success? Because I've always kind of, I came to this work because I believe that students come to us to become who they're meant to be. And that is our job on our campus, is to work together as a full unit. So accreditation liaisons on our campus and the student affairs leaders and academic affairs leader need to come more together around this. And I feel that accreditation is an opportunity for campuses to do that, where leadership can be looking at the standards years before reporting is due and saying, how does this help us become what we're meant to be for our students? So as we pay attention to these outcome trends and refreshing the work on our campus towards student success, that's kind of our critical work that we have to do, because that's what we're supposed to be doing. But it also helps us maintain the accreditation. I get an opportunity to talk to every new staff member on our campus and tell them, what even is accreditation? Our institution is trying not to hide the fact that although we've passed our cycle, we are constantly aware of the importance of accreditation to our students, because we wouldn't be able to offer federal funding to our students. And we are a very high first generation institution. So our students wouldn't be able to get the education that they came here for without accreditation. So tying that all together and saying it's a job for all of us, but not just because of accreditation, because it's a solid continuous improvement professional practice. And that's what we're here to do. So I think that it informs practice in all of those ways. And if it helps us break down those silos and those barriers, so be it. That would be an amazing opportunity for not only as a place to work, but for our students to be.
Pam, thank you. You, Sarah, and Bill are reminding us of the importance of accreditation, continuous improvement, and student success, and indeed that the entire institution needs to work together for all of these purposes. We've been certainly alluding to this throughout our conversation today, so I'd like to ask it maybe very directly. Why is it important for student affairs and all of the associated resources, programs, and services that fall under this broad umbrella? Why is it important for student affairs to explicitly be included in accreditation standards and criteria? Sarah, we'll kick it off with you, continue to Pam, and conclude with Bill. Sarah.
Yes, I love this question because it is very direct and absolutely how we kind of came to start working together was really to help try to answer this question. Why is it important for student affairs to be explicitly included in accreditation standards and criteria? It's important because the work of student affairs in general on university and college campuses is essential to the function of the campus. It is the work that student affairs professionals do relates very much to students being successful and students achieving the goals that they have for themselves, that society has for them in going through higher education. It's all very important work. And where we started out was having conversations amongst ourselves about knowing that that was there, but not always knowing if it was being captured in a way that contributed to the story of the institution as a whole when it comes to reporting to our accrediting bodies. So I really think that here it's about ensuring that the work that we're doing is counted and that it is valued, and that we're able to demonstrate as colleges and universities what a campus does for our students and the value that higher education provides for society as a whole, and how we work to help ensure that our students come to college and also successfully graduate from college. And that's not just grades in a classroom. although obviously that is very important, there's a whole lot that happens in the time that we're off, that students are on a campus. And that's not just undergraduate students. That also includes graduate students and those students who are becoming honed experts in their field, producers of research, and disseminators of information.
Sarah, thank you. You've been describing for us the why in terms of labeling student affairs and accreditation standards and criteria. Pam, continue.
And I would say, and add that, you know, the standards and criteria, we are called to report cyclically on those standards and criteria. If it's every 5 to 10 years, and what we are asked to report on, we measure, and what we measure matters. And so therefore the impact of student affairs on student success, historically being underrated, if we are now included in that language in what is measured and what's reported, then we can start proving that learning and improvements and contributions of student affairs is kind of everywhere within the campus structure. And so my only real big thing is the reason it was why it's important, because what we measure is what matters to folks.
Pam, thank you. And finally, Bill, your thoughts.
Well, not much more to say. I'll just add one of my mentors is a rhetorician and like to talk about nouns and verbs. And I think in a lot of ways, we're talking more about the verbs now. You know, if we were talking about nouns like student affairs, functional areas, now we're talking about the verbs like deliver student success. So in that sense, I would say, you know, what we're counting now is those, you know, how those verbs matter. So I'll just add that, you know, it's important for student affairs folks to know what they do and where it's counted, so it gets counted at the right times, as Pam and Sarah were saying.
Bill, thank you. And you and Pam and Sarah are alluding to the sort of cyclical nature of this work. So I'd like to turn our attention to just that topic. What are the implications and opportunities for student affairs units and the professionals therein? What are the opportunities to leverage the periodic comprehensive evaluation cycles that are typically associated with accreditation? In other words, in what ways can accreditation serve as, say, a catalyst for change within student affairs itself and across the institution as a whole? We'll start with Pam, continue to Bill, and conclude with Sarah. Pam.
And I would just pick up what I had mentioned before, that institutions where accreditation is on their radar more than on the, our report is due next year, we have to start writing it, but in a way that informs their continuous improvement and their cycles of campus more broadly outside of the reporting cycle, are the ones where you're going to get the sense where continuous improvement is actually occurring. And so the more opportunities for student affairs to leverage that is being able to be at the table, kind of the theme of our first article, in that that being at the table grows the exposure of the impact of student affairs to student success. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be at institutions, both large ones and small ones, where I can talk to our institutional president. And that's who accreditors are listening to. And so if student affairs can continue to edge their way into that conversation with their president, it edges their way into the conversation with accreditors as well. So that feedback loop and timing it just right with whenever accreditors are talking to the institutional leadership, that's going to start informing the cycles, because boots on the ground, the folks who are actually where students are, academic advisors, student affairs professionals, everyone across campus who are touching our students are the ones who actually know what has helped drive student success. And so those are the opportunities for student affairs to leverage the opportunity to tweak and change with what is going on with accreditation. And I feel like we've said student success several dozen times at this point, but I think that that's a way that the catalyst for change is just ensuring students are getting what they came for.
Pam, thank you. Bill, now to you.
My experience of student affairs units, as I understand them and as I've worked in them and worked with them, is that the potential is to be a lot more nimble with programs and services. So the implications, you know, getting in the cycle, student affairs could do a couple experiments in a 10-year accreditation cycle. They could try, you know, two different cohort models of a particular kind of service or trying to execute on a particular kind of initiative or outcome. And faculty can be nimble too, but disciplines shape, you know, a lot of what faculty do over time. And that's a slower process when it comes to curriculum change. But student affairs, you know, it has a local audience, has a local context, and I think has the opportunity to do, you know, do that kind of change making, you know, within the cycle instead of across multiple 10-year cycles. So I'll leave that there.
Bill, thank you for encouraging people to experiment, risk take, and research in between accreditation cycles. And Sarah, now to you.
Yeah, I would just say to kind of sum that up with what both Pam and Bill said, I think the accreditation process and the accreditation cycle gives us the opportunity to ask a lot of questions. And if we really are doing our work towards improvement and not just for not just for accountability or just because someone's telling us to, right? But truly working towards improvement, we can ask a lot of questions. We can think about, you know, what's working and what's not. Why are we doing this? What's the purpose? What's the end game? What goal are we trying to achieve with all of the different services and programs and things that we have going on campus? What do we need to keep doing? What do we need to stop doing? How do we know that a program or service or resource is doing what we hope or thought it was supposed to do? I think that's the real opportunity with the accreditation cycles that we have. I think that our accreditors offer us pretty explicit questions and set goals for us and help us kind of see the end game and see what's supposed to be there. And like Sam said, that's informed by working professionals as well. So we can seize that opportunity and really use it to let us be able to ask and answer the questions that we have.
Sarah is reminding us to ask and answer the questions that we have, which is a good segue to my next question, which is, as you look ahead, what comes next in your research? What are broader themes and trends you see unfolding in student affairs specifically and in higher education more generally? So what's on the research agenda for Bill, Sarah, and Pam? We'll take it in that order. Bill.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. So from this, you know, from this little bit of review of these standards changes, we have lots and lots of questions. We pose those questions in our newsletter article that's coming out in March. But some of the things I'm interested in, I work on organizations and organizational change. So I'm interested to see how professional training changes, how I student affairs is as a profession is looking towards certification. You know, that represents a kind of maturity in the field, which I really appreciate. I'm curious to see how it changes in response to this, these kinds of accreditation changes. I'm also really interested in the kinds of organizational roles that emerge. The shift potentially away from structures and units called student affairs in some cases, you know, what comes next and how do campuses literally rearrange their efforts, their labor, their budgets in order to meet the needs? And I think that's a really engaging space and energetic space on a campus. And I'm curious to see what happens. One of those trends I'm seeing now and working on actively is in the emergence of dozens of experiential education offices. So whole offices with some title or initiative or project and people assigned to them with the term experiential education in the title. And that, I think, is a certain kind of amalgamation or a reorganization. I'm not sure if reorg is the right word, but, you know, rearrangement of a powerful pedagogy, you know, in order to meet some institutional goals or student success goals. So, yeah, that's the kind of stuff I'm looking at now.
Bill, thank you. Sarah, now to you, the themes and trends informing your research agenda.
I think one of the things that I'm excited about for where our particular group is going next, one of the things that we want to do and plan to pursue soon is really exploring the perspective of student affairs professionals regarding the role that they and the field of student affairs plays in the accreditation process, and actually be able to get in, get into interviewing and talking with these different professionals across accrediting bodies who have experience going through the accreditation or reaccreditation cycles on their campuses in the last 5 to 10 years, so that we can truly understand their experiences. To this point, a lot of our work has been really interacting with the paper, right? So we're reading the standards, we're looking at websites, we're kind of just tracking from what we can see. And I'm excited for the next phase of our work, where we will actually talk to these professionals and see if the trends that we feel like are emerging from the changes in standards are translating on the ground with the work that these professionals are doing.
Sarah, thank you. And finally, to Pam.
And just to build off of where Sarah is, so one of the broader themes is that there are accrediting standards that had not changed really at all across this 10-year cycle of their, you know, becoming relevant and ensuring they're continuous improving. And then others that have seen some significant shifts in this movement towards outcomes in their language. And I'm, like Sarah, very interested in how that's impacting student affairs practice. If there feels in the work that student affairs professionals are doing a difference in those areas that are accredited by those accrediting agencies that have had major shifts towards outcomes versus those who have already been in that space of outcomes, and how does it impact practice across this national landscape and the impact of accreditation on that, and how broadly do we say that accrediting agencies actually shift the work of student affairs? I think that that would be really powerful research that kind of would help folks understand this accreditation accountability and where we live. But also in terms of trends, and maybe it's not so much a trend, but maybe it's a hope for me to see it, how fast these things are happening. Are we iterating faster as higher education to meet global society demands? Are we doing this critical skill building through the curriculum and student affairs in a way that we can measure it and report it in a way that holds us to, we say we're doing these things for our students? So those are kind of where I think research, at least grounded in the work we've been doing with accreditation, can be. But there's just so many questions, as Bill alluded to.
Stay tuned for the individual and collective research coming to us from Bill, Sarah, and Pam. We always conclude our episodes by asking guests to leave our listeners with a brief final thought. So I'd like to do so right now by asking each of you to share your words of wisdom or inspiration you'd like to share as we wrap up our time together. We'll start this final question with Sarah, continue to Pam, and conclude with Bill. Sarah, your brief final thought.
So when I'm in the classroom, I teach a kind of joke that I teach classes that people aren't necessarily super excited to take, like research methods or, you know, statistics or any sort of analysis type course. But I always tell them it's really important to know these things because it affects your work. And if you don't know, then we're leaning on other people to know or make decisions without knowing. So in the context of what we're talking about here, I think, like, to me, a big takeaway is understanding accreditation. And in the climate that we're in, where there's a lot of discussion about education and what we should and shouldn't be doing, and we're in an environment where institutions can now pick which accrediting body they want to be associated with, I think understanding how and in what directions accreditors are moving is really, really important to college campuses. And if you don't necessarily care about that, I think that it's important to care a lot about how accreditation works because it affects our work. And then I would also say one other takeaway, a more fun takeaway, is that I love that the way that Pam, Bill, and I met is on a listserv fairly randomly. So I would just also remind everyone to use their resources. Don't be afraid to reach out to people that you don't know, because we have a pretty solid 6-year relationship year where we have done a lot of really fun and important work and gotten some publications out of it. So don't be afraid to connect.
Sarah, thank you. And now to Pam.
Well, I would say in my 30-ish years of being in higher education, that's just a really exciting time to be in higher education because we are moving faster than we ever have. I mean, you know, we get to be in the middle space of what students come to us for, what employers demand, where innovation lives. It's also kind of a challenging time to create and maintain standards and expectations. So the accreditation space is also kind of full of energy and what do they want to see and happen. So it's there's just so much more that we can learn and know and do. How could anyone possibly be bored working in higher education at this time? So just watching the improvements and growth in higher education over these last 30 years, it's been exciting. So I feel like it's a field that, you know, as a first generation student, I didn't even know existed, but I'm so excited to be a strong advocate for higher education and the impacts it has to improve lives.
Pam, thank you. And finally, our final thought, if you will, comes to us from Bill.
Wow, a lot of pressure here. So the word that comes to mind here is translation. Something that I've thought about is, you know, we over the years, even in my career, which isn't all that long, but I've seen a lot of names and terms and research given to the kind of care and educational relationships we create and cultivate and maintain with students in order to help them be successful. You know, some of the research is around persistence, some of it's around retention. Now it's about student success. So these labels have changed, and a lot of the work we do is good and useful in that space, but we have to translate it, right? We have to find the pieces of it or the constructs within that work that stack up to meaning. I think that evolution, is helpful and good. And I think it keeps us moving. As Pam said, lots of things are changing. You know, in my vantage point now where I'm in a firm where we get to look at, you know, we get to work with clients who all call these different labels. They have different labels for a lot of the same things. Based on the institutional context, I find that to be translation is a really useful term in that space. So I guess my thought for student affairs practitioners, you know, if you're new to this work, your work counts twice, right? You get to, your students really, really benefit from your work. But the people who collect the data are translating that into something that can be reported, which is another kind of use and usefulness for the work that student affairs folks are doing. I think that's really important. So if you're new to student affairs, you know, remember your work counts twice. And if you've been around student affairs for a while, please tell the newer folks to keep counting things.
Bill, thank you. We've been speaking with Bill Heinrich, Sarah Gordon, and Pam Sheffman. And we've been talking about, among other things, the role of student affairs in assessment and accreditation work and the research that Bill, Sarah, Pam, and others have been advancing in our understanding of this space. Bill, Sarah, Pam, thanks so much for our time together today. I have enjoyed our conversation immensely.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to share.
This has been Leading Improvements in Higher Education, the award-winning podcast service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Learn more and access other episodes at assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. Learn more at jmu.edu/assessment. Our podcast producers are Chad Beckner and Angela Bergman, with original music composed by Caleb Keith. If you know someone who might enjoy the podcast, please encourage them to give us a listen. We appreciate your help in spreading the word. I'm Stephen Hundley, inviting you to join us again for Leading Improvements in Higher Education.